Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
This evening, I was thinking back through when I first ran for the seat, this body of Pensacola City Council. We met one time per month, and shortly after I was seated, we voted and determined that the business of the people of Pensacola was important enough that it deserved more of our time, more of our attention. That the job we had to do in these elected seats deserved a greater degree of regularity and attention.
So you might be wondering why Jared Moore is soliloquizing. Soliloquying? Making a soliloquy. At the end of the very short city council meeting last night, in which everything went swimmingly, and there was one, I think just one public comment from Dr. Glory Horning, and there was a mildly funny moment with Dr. Horning because, you know, she is always talking about flooding issues and water quality issues in her house and around her house. She lives over there by, what is the name of that park now? All of a sudden, it goes out of my brain. Right there by Old Stinky, north and west of the Wahoos ballpark. I can't believe I can't think of the name of the big water park that they put in as a water feature. Anyway, she's always talking about those things and very critically, and about how the city is failing to do its duty. And then Delirian Wiggins, city councilman for that area, he gets up and, you know, he talks about how, you know, the city's really trying, and they've been working with Dr. Horning for years and years and years and trying to satisfy her because she's, you know, it is a problem, the flooding in that area. And then, you know, she wanted to push back, and they don't really do back and forth at the city council meetings. And he said,
"Horn, I'm not going to get into a tongue wrestling match with you across the hall, but we can talk after the meeting, okay?"
Gonna get into a tongue wrestling match with you across the hall. I like that, but, you know, okay, fine. Well, back that was at the beginning of the meeting. Very quick meeting, now 30 minutes, 35 minutes, something like that. Everything passed except for the things that were pulled, no big deal, including the parking rate increase to $1 an hour. But that's not the relevant portion. I'm just giving you a little bit of context. Jared Moore, again, the representative for district three. Let's go with three. I'm working it out in my head. Who has, you know, been, he has put his name in to be the replacement commissioner for District 4 now that Robert Bender is a supervisor of elections. He has not declared to run in the election because if he declares, then he has to vacate the city council seat. You know, we have, three people, I think, officially in: Walker Wilson, Ashley Hoffberger, and Buck Mitchell are in for that. Ron Helms, I think, also on the Democrat side. And, you know, lots of people have put their name in the hat to be nominated by the governor. We don't even know how many. I've asked. They just won't say because I don't know, but the governor's office just won't get back to me on this. You know, they initially, we processed your request. We're working on it. No, okay. Well, you know, look, it's April. I mean, it's just no satisfaction. I haven't followed up because I probably should, but I just haven't. Anyway, okay, so Jared Moore last night. He's talking, and people are like, why is he talking, okay?
And that's just something that seems ubiquitously true, that things that are important deserve regular attention. Thinking about money, how long do you leave your money unattended? I wouldn't set my wallet here and walk off and leave it very long. How long do you leave your children unattended? Your job. How long could you be away from your job and leave it unattended? And I say all that to say, as you're all puzzled, looking at me wondering...
I love Jared. Jared's a good friend, and I think he does really good work on city council. But he does sometimes have a little bit of a windup to the things that he says, all right? And here's the key.
Tomorrow marks the 11th week that the Escambia County Board of County Commissioners seat for District 4 sits vacant. And so the things we do in these positions is either important or it's not important. There's either a job to do or there's not a job to do. And I think, you know, that's 20% of the year that 20% of our elected county government sits vacant. And it troubles me because I believe that's a political, it's held up in the political process. When politics begins to take precedent over people, I think that's a problem.
I mean, he's absolutely right. I mean, we're pushing a quarter of the year without a District 4 commissioner for Escambia County. That's bad. I mean, when it was ECUA, when the passing of Dr. McCorvey, and it was, God, when it's like 10 months. But it's ECUA. I mean, you know, it's ECUA. How many of you have ever watched an ECUA board meeting? Did you know they have board meetings? I mean, you know, it's not that the work they do isn't important. It's just that it's not a lot of controversy, not normally. It's not a lot of disagreement, not normally. It's just, and it's kind of just a couple of issues, right? I mean, it's important stuff, you know, water, wastewater, trash, recycling, yard waste. 405, we're done now, right? I mean, that, you know, it's not, okay? So ECUA, that's such a big deal. The Board of County Commissioners in Escambia County, it's a big deal to be down a person. You've had votes that can't happen. You've had meetings that almost couldn't happen. You know, you've had, you know, this is bad. Pushing a quarter now. And if it's being held up because of, you know, politics, you know, who's the governor want to appoint, that's bad. And there's a fear amongst a lot of us. I hope this is not the case, but there's a fear that the governor won't appoint anybody to this seat. And we're going to be running down a wheel for till the election in November. Insanity. Unless you think it just doesn't matter that a fifth of the county doesn't have a representative they can call. I mean, you know, you can call Mike Kohler if you live in District 4 and be like, hey, pay attention to me. Or Jeff Bergosh or Stephen Barry Luma, hey, pay attention to me. But you're not their constituents. And they probably will. And the county staff will do their best. But I'm just, you know, there's a reason we, in representative democracy, that we have elected officials that if you've got an issue, you can call them and talk to them and lobby them and complain to them and raise issues and, you know, persuade them on votes. So this is really, really bad for a very important layer of our government.
And I do know there are people that say, well, this is a self-serving statement for the guy who's got an application in for that appointment. But I just ask you, is what I'm saying not true? Is it true? And would making this statement publicly, does it really come across as strategically political, politically strategic for an appointment process?
See, at first you say, maybe. I see, I didn't even have this response just because I know Jared so well. He's just trying to help himself. What, get appointed? So you would think that the best political maneuver when there's one person to make the decision about whether to appoint you to an open political seat, the best political maneuver is to go out in public and say, sir, you're screwing up. I mean, it's that, you know, this is kind of politically risky for him if he really hopes to get the appointment because he's criticizing the timeliness or lack thereof of the one guy who's going to make the appointment decision. It's actually anti-self-serving. From a strategy point of view, right?
Anyway, it just troubles me that we're held up at this point and that the district, the county that really covers about half of this city, we have no representation. And I think that's troubling and deserves our attention. Thank you, Mr. President.
Yeah, because remember, the city of Pensacola is split mostly between about half of it is, you know, District 4, and then about the other not quite half is District 3, and then another slice of it is District 2. But a massive portion of the city, and plus Pensacola Beach, does not have representation on the county commission right now, and that is a problem. Jen Brayer?
I just have to say that, no, I think that statement was fine. It was an important statement. And our constituents, because there's a great deal of us sitting up here, that our constituents, that is their county representative as well, and we don't even know who to call on some of these things. So it is troublesome, and I think that was an important thing to say. So I support what you said. I just wanted to say that.
Second.
Yeah, agreed. It's important.
Yeah, and I keep having this fear that
Charles Bear,
they're going to appoint somebody I won't know, and I'm going to say something about it, and somebody's like, no, they appointed so-and-so. So and it's now it's getting just ridiculous. You know, I'm like, it's been so long. And, you know, just having to address issues within my district that I could use some help from a county commissioner that was in that district would really, you know, it's getting difficult.
Right. I mean, and not just constituents, but other political elected leaders trying to get things done where they would normally work with the county commissioners in order to get it done and not having a person that they can work with. He's exactly right.
Oh, I'm hopeful something happens, but I have this bad feeling it's going to be until the election. That's kind of the rumor I've heard, and that is very unfortunate to go with four county commissioners and not have one for our district.
So, yeah, this is a problem. This is bad. You know, when session was going on, I was kind of raised the question occasionally because I thought, well, you know, when the governor's got session going on, and of course now he's got bill signing going on, and yeah, okay. There's always a lot of things going on for the governor. And, you know, I'm a big fan of Governor DeSantis, but this is bad. We need a District 4 commissioner, period. No asterisk, no footnote. It needs to happen. And long before the election, let alone even the primary, it just needs to happen. I mean, by the summer, we need one about a month or two ago. You know, 2 months is a fair amount of time. We're pushing, you know, three almost. So 437-1620. Oh, I did think about, you know, Jen Brayer. She's like, so I don't know, you know, whenever I've got a problem, I'm not quite sure who I should call. Well, apparently the answer is not the governor's office. 521 on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's the Pensacola Morning News. If you need to think about buying that next vehicle, buying one that is a little bit newer but not brand new is what I would recommend because, you know, Dave Ramsey recommends Frontier Motors. I recommend Frontier Motors. They kind of fit that economic model of don't spend all that money on money that's just depreciation. You know, as soon as you drive it off the lot, basically, that's when you lose all the money in that car. You know, buy one that's going to be a year or two or 3 years young. It's going to be low miles, great condition that you can then drive for, you know, 10 or 15 years. That's how I drive cars, and that's how, like I said, Dave Ramsey recommends you drive that car. Frontier Motors specializes in just those kind of cars. Cars you don't have to worry about, cars you can enjoy, cars that won't cost you money every other month when you're, you know, putting money into the old car that you really should have gotten rid of already. Go to Frontier. They got about 300 different cars and trucks on the lot. It's very easy to look. It's very easy to decide what you want. If they've got it, you can buy it. If they don't have it, they can go look for it. And like I said, the prices are very reasonable. The service is fantastic. Frontier Motors, serving the Pensacola community for more than 25 years, behind the Big Buffalo on Beverly Parkway. Be sure to tell them Andrew McKay says hi.
What's fun and happening in Pensacola? You'll find out as the City of Pensacola Parks and Recreation Department talks about it on the Pensacola Expert Panel. Join them today as they detail what's going on in your city parks and resource centers. It's time to get out and play. Tune in today at 9 a.m. The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions. 850-437-1620.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Wrap up your day with all of the national, state, local sports and entertainment news with Pensacola Right Now with Joe and Austin on News Radio 92.3.
Oh, there's going to be sex, drugs, rock and roll, chips, dips, chains, whips. You know, basic high school orgy type of thing.
One Saturday I took a walk to Zipper Head.
I can't exactly tell you why, but of all the songs that the Dead Milkmen ever put out that made it onto, you know, at least a chart or onto a mixtape that your friend gave you in secret underneath the desk at school because he didn't want to get caught with the profanity in his possession, Punk Rock Girl is that makes you happy song. Beelzebubba, name of the album on that one. And, man, Big Lizard in My Backyard. No, Big Lizard in My Backyard, sorry. Actually, I had the vinyl for that. Goodness. 520, the big album with all of the other cool songs. 525 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. We've got David Wayne in the newsroom this morning with our headlines. David?
Well, a new analysis is estimating that President Biden's new student debt relief plan could cost taxpayers around $84 billion. A Penn Wharton budget model looked at five parts of the plan to total how much the initiatives would cost. The model shows the biggest cost would be the proposal to cancel up to $20,000 for borrowers with balances from unpaid interest. Los Angeles Dodgers star Shohei Ohtani's interpreter is now being, or former interpreter, being federally charged with bank fraud now for stealing the $16 million from him. Ipe Muzahara made unauthorized bank transfers from Ohtani's account in late 2021 until January of this year. And the CDC is saying there's no evidence that COVID vaccines caused fatal heart attacks or other heart issues for young people. New report out this week looked at 1,300 deaths of vaccinated people between 16 and 30 in Oregon who died of heart conditions or unknown causes in 2021 or 2022. They say in this report that three of those people died within 100 days of getting the vaccine, and of those, two were attributed to underlying health conditions, the third found to be undetermined.
Well, that ought to settle it. I mean, all of the vaccine skeptics are going to be persuaded, and we can stop all
harmony
of this
in the world, right?
Yeah, everybody's, yeah. I mean, they're not going to complain about it being a self-serving report. They're not going to, you know, complain about it being a government cover-up. They're going to listen to what you just said, and they're going to be like, oh, okay, that makes sense.
No, they're going to listen to what the CDC just said.
You know, okay. Can I just because you mentioned it, let me point this out.
Yes, sir.
Because maybe there's a chance I can slip a little wedge into a very minor hairline fracture in the reasoning worldview of the vaccine skeptics. Okay, you ready?
I'm ready.
So you said that the evidence showed that of the three deaths within 100 days of receiving the vaccine for young people due to heart issues, that two of them were from underlying health issues, and the other one was from, what did it say?
The other one was found to be undetermined.
Undetermined. Okay, all right. So at least two of them they could rule out as being based on underlying causes, right? Okay?
Right.
Now, the vaccine skeptics, COVID skeptics in general, what was the biggest question that they would raise again and again and again about COVID deaths? The question was, well, did they die with COVID or did they die from COVID? And did they die because of COVID or did they die because of COVID and underlying health problems? Right?
Right.
Okay. So the same people that ask a very appropriate question, was it underlying health issues that made them vulnerable to COVID? And so why would healthy people need to get a vaccine, for example? A fair question to ask. Will they then turn around and ignore the idea that underlying health issues were related to the death and not according to the vaccine and not because of the vaccine? You see the discrepancy in reasoning there, that they want to embrace an alternative explanation for the death with COVID and do not want to embrace an alternative explanation due to death with COVID with the vaccine. Just, you know, saying, just raising the issue. 528 on News Radio. David, thank you so much for the update. 528 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. If you're thinking about buying that next home or the first home or selling a house or buying a rental, you know, buying a vacation rental, buying an investment house, whatever the case may be, Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty, they will help you. And, you know, they sold 175 homes last year. So on the sell side, I mean, it's a no-brainer. Like, they know what they're doing. They have this, I mean, 3.5 homes a week. That's kind of crazy. But they have this whole process for staging, for photographing, for listing, setting the price, doing open house, all of it where they can, I mean, guarantee basically almost a result. And that's the idea, producing great selling prices. Now, on the buying side, because they know selling so well, they know how to get the best price on the buy side. They know what other people are going to offer. They know what you can negotiate and what you can't negotiate and what a new home actually might be able to be negotiated or how they might buy down your points because that's something that happens these days. My point is expertise in the field right now with what's going on here locally. That's Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty. 723-9158. 6:30 here on News Radio 92.3. And in case you had not heard, O.J. Simpson died. Just in case you had, fallen down the well and Lassie hadn't gotten to you yesterday. I mean, 76 years old of cancer, O.J. died. And We are back to discussing whether he did or he didn't. I thought we had figured this out. I thought we had decided. But no, the answer is it very much depends on, most likely it depends on, well, what racial demographic you're in. Because one group thinks one way and one group thinks another way. And it's probably not likely that any reasoning is going to persuade either side.
Fox News, I'm Chris Foster. The U.S. Embassy in Israel is restricting travel for employees and their families over concern about a possible attack by Iran.
Iran has promised revenge on Israel after an airstrike hit its embassy compound in the Syrian capital of Damascus on April 1st. The attack killed two senior members of Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps.
Fox's Madeline Rivera. After 19 Republicans blocked it earlier this week, a House vote is expected today on reauthorizing Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, FISA.
The intelligence community says it's a vital tool for preventing terror threats, but some lawmakers believe it's been used to target Americans. Several of the Republicans who tanked the bill are satisfied with changes that reauthorizes FISA for 2 years instead of five, with the expectation certain amendments like a warrant requirement will be voted on at some point.
Fox's Ryan Schmelz, America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 5:31 at News Radio 92.3 right now. We've got mostly clear skies, 54 degrees in Pensacola. Triumph Gulf Coast providing a big boost for tourism efforts in Northwest Florida. The board awarding grants totaling $10.5 million to Visit Florida. That'll be used exclusively by eight Panhandle counties, stretching from Escambia to Wakulla County.
$4.5 million for the next 3 years. So that is really an investment that will move the needle for Northwest Florida beaches. We have a lot in common along the coast, but each county is unique and has something different to offer.
That is Visit Pensacola's Darren Schaefer telling Channel 3 that the counties are pushing the slogan Adventure Within Reach in ad campaigns on social media and on streaming services. Thanks to the funding, they're looking to expand into some new markets. University of West Florida celebrating a record-setting donation. The school announced yesterday that it received $9 million from Daryl and Debbie Gooden. That's the largest gift from a living donor in UWF history. President Martha Saunders says that money will be used to break ground on the future home of the football team, Daryl Gooden Stadium. Gooden is a Pensacola native who studied accounting at UWF. He says he's thrilled and honored to be able to give the donation, and also said it was a great time to be an Argo. The National Weather Service is confirming that there were two tornadoes during yesterday's bout of severe weather here in our area. Surveyors released preliminary reports that EF1 tornadoes were confirmed in both Bellevue and Pace. The Bellevue Twister was a little bit stronger, winds up to about 110 miles an hour. The Pace storm, the winds topped out at around 105. Survey teams are continuing to assess the damage around the area. The final assessments should be released in the next few days. A Milton man's accused of financially exploiting an elderly man that he had power of attorney over. The state attorney general's office says Ira Roberts is charged with second-degree felony exploitation of an elderly person. Investigators say the victim was an 82-year-old from Escambia County. Roberts allegedly transferred over $40,000 to his own account between June of 2021 and December of 2022. The Attorney General's Medicaid Fraud Control Unit says he spent about $17,000 of that money on his own personal bills and purchases. And a Fort Walton Beach man facing a homicide charge after allegedly flinging a woman off of his truck, causing a head injury that ultimately killed her. This happened last month. Officials say 27-year-old Matthew Reeves and the victim had left a nightclub after an argument. Well, sometime later, that woman had gotten out of the truck he was driving and was clinging to the hood and standing on the bumper. Investigators say Reeves had accelerated into a parking lot, then slammed on the brakes. That forced the woman to fly off the truck backwards. She hit her head in that fall and ended up dying on April 1st. Investigators say the incident was captured on surveillance video. And Reeves remains in the Okaloosa County Jail, where he's currently being held with no bond. 534 at News Radio 92.3. Let's get a look at our Channel 3 weather.
We are going to have a beautiful sunny day today. Temperatures starting off chilly, but warming up into the mid-70s by the afternoon. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 52. Beautiful sunny weather as we go into the weekend. Sunshine for Saturday, high near 75. Sunshine as we go into Sunday as well with a high near 76. This is Brooke Richardson for the First Morning Weather Center.
Right now it is 54 in Pensacola, 55 in Gulf Breeze, and 53 in Milton. Our next news at 6. Breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne, News Radio 92.3.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. Apple shares climbed 4.3% yesterday to a share price of $175.04. Apple's rise came during a strong day for technology stocks in general, especially those with an artificial intelligence angle. Overall, Apple shares are down more than 5% this year, despite some negative trends around iPhone sales in China and recent reports of canceled projects. JP Morgan analysts say investors may be more comfortable with the tech giant's current valuation. Constellation Brands CEO Bill Newlands has explained how the company plans to improve its wine and spirits division, saying it will focus on critical brands in the segment. This includes Prisoner and High West, for example. The company is primarily known for its beer business, which includes popular brands like Modelo, Corona, and Pacifico. Despite shortcomings with its wine and spirits business, the company's quarterly earnings report did show strength in its beer sales. Futures are mixed. That's Your Money Now.
Attention. At any event, gathering, or party, what's the one thing people talk about when it's over? The food. That's why, for over 25 years, locals have chosen Culinary Production as their caterer of choice. Chef Mike DeSorbo and his culinary team have been given rave reviews from very satisfied customers. And now, Culinary Production offers a venue space for your next event. A venue space for 250-plus people with catering, bar service, and more, all in downtown Pensacola. Get all the information you need at culinaryproductions.net.
I've been collecting watches since around 2018. Made my first big purchase thinking that was going to be my only watch. When you're looking at watches and you're doing them online, or if you're in the secondary market, it can be scary because there's a lot of fakes. And I really do focus in on coming in to an authorized dealer like Bray's for any of the Omega or Breitling purchases. They will let you try it on, take pictures, go home, think about it, and just really set your mind at ease.
Come visit us at Bray Jewelers.
News Radio Pensacola, your home for informative, local, and dependable news and talk. Start your mornings off with the award-winning Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay, followed by the Pensacola Expert Panel with Jake. Then, get informed and laugh from 11 till 2 with Markley, Van Camp, and Robbins, followed by the Guy Benson Show. Your afternoon drive is anchored by Pensacola Right Now with Joe and Austin, followed by Dave Ramsey. It's News Radio Pensacola, heard on 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620.
This project, or this item before you, is a demonstration discretionary grant that, because we have that Safe Streets for All action plan in place, we are now eligible to apply for a demonstration grant to start deploying technology on a test bed corridor. That test bed corridor we've already identified as the Highway 29.
This is Austin Mount. He is the CEO for the Emerald Coast. Emerald Coast Regional Planning Commission. I forget the exact name of it, but it's something close to that. Anyway, the TPO, you think of them as owning the Transportation Planning Organization, and that's exactly right. So they deal with roads and making sure that our whole area, Baldwin County, Scambia County, Santa Rosa County, are kind of putting projects together and working as a unit because all of our roads are interconnected, and then liaising with FDOT as kind of the local delegation that represents everybody. The city of Milton, Gulf Breeze, Century, Pensacola, and all three county commissioners, all of them are on. It's a huge board. It's like 20, 22 or something like that people. Anyway, talking about this project on US 29 that will bring technology to bear to try to make it safer. And we talked with him extensively yesterday about some traffic issues. Austin, welcome to the Pensacola Morning News for the very first time.
Hey, thanks. Good morning to you, and good morning to everyone.
Yeah, great to have you.
Hopefully, I'll stay awake.
So let's. This is a kind of an interesting project. I had two things I want to talk with you about. One is this Vision Zero. We'll get to that in a second. The other is this testbed project for US 29. The way I understand it is there's a bunch of grant money that we're being able to get access to that is going to let us turn a massive section of US 29 into a test project for trying to achieve pedestrian and vehicle safety through a variety of technology measures. Do I sort of have it right?
Yeah, you absolutely do. There's a lot more context, you know, a lot more information to share about that as to how we got to this point and why we're here. I think I can hopefully summarize it in an easy to understand for the public's sake. The Highway 29 corridor that we have stemming from basically from the interstate to downtown, like to North Palafox area, is really one of our highest fatality corridors that we have. And it's interesting to we haven't really seen much in the way of advocacy as what we have seen with Cervantes Street. We have a lot of really prominent fatality incidents over there, but Highway 29 is proven to be in that W Street area a really high fatality corridor. And so we've identified that technology is a way to help identify what is happening and how do we solve these fatalities on a broader scale basis.
And when you're talking about fatalities, it's not so much, my understanding, it's not so much drivers as it is bicyclists and pedestrians. And, you know, speed in that corridor, of course, is very high, and people cross it at night, not where there's a crosswalk, all kinds of places like they do everywhere in Escambia County. But that is a particularly dangerous area for them. And so the testbed area is what, like from 10 down to Brent is what you're thinking about? And this is something different from the advanced traffic management system that's going to be, that kind of currently operates, but they're building a center for it over on W Street to control traffic lights and facilitate traffic flow. This is that, but a lot more than that. Is that right?
Yeah, it basically stems off of that initiative. So as we talk about, and this is something we hear a lot from our public, is everybody has your own segments of the corridors that you drive, and we see and we hear how congested and how much time people sit at a traffic signal. And so across the board, across the entire region, we've really put a lot of focus, and I've got to give a lot of praise to our board for steering this initiative of technology, because if we're able to boost the infrastructure that we have with accurate, efficient technology and a monitoring system that can help understand and change the signal sequencing and the signal communication and provide data back, then we can have a more efficient system. I know a lot of people that have moved here will often compare the area to other regions across the country, and we've heard that a lot. And so there are people that work behind the scenes to do exactly that, and they do a fantastic job. But we are sometimes limited in our ability to do the most efficient because of the technology that we have. Okay. Some of our signals have some old technology on them. Lightning, probably even last night, I haven't seen the report today, but lightning wreaks havoc on our traffic signals and the sensors that are out there, because it can wipe out a signal with just one lightning strike, and right, it'll fry the whole cabinet and everything in it. So it's a constant battle to keep the system up and running. So we desperately need some upgrades. And as you mentioned, the hub of it, the traffic management center, is going to be built later this year. We're going to start construction on it at the Escambia County Emergency Operations Center. And that will be the center that all of the traffic operations are housed out of for the entire area, for the whole region. And this technology project, the testbed project that we're talking about, is going to be connected into that facility. It's right there close by.
Right.
We're in partnership with the county right now to design that fiber optic connection. And so we're going to go after this grant to see if there's any opportunity to see what technology we can bring.
No, I love it. And you know, obviously that this means enhancing, for example, you know, running fiber all through there and getting everything able to be connected up, putting in sensors for all kinds of things from cars to pedestrians, you know, to being able to manipulate the traffic to both achieve traffic efficiency and to reduce pedestrian and bicyclist danger. And, you know, ideally you get them both. Plus, I love the mention yesterday you made of there's grant money available from the Fed, surplus grant money, because nobody else is really applying for this. And we think we have an opportunity to kind of be not necessarily, but almost first in the nation kind of with the tie into the technology of the traffic center. Austin, a completely different subject, which had actually had been the reason I wanted to talk to you this morning, is your organization is in favor of something that the state and even the federal transportation planners call Vision Zero. Vision Zero being the intended goal of having zero fatalities related to traffic, whether it is car drivers or whether it is pedestrians or bicyclists, and designing a traffic system with the comprehensive goal of hitting that zero mark. I have been very critical of Vision Zero in the past, not because I don't want to see deaths reduced, I do, but because I think that we all drive in such a way and show by our behavior and our psychology that we're not willing to embrace the impediment of transportation that Vision Zero would be. We could have Vision Zero tomorrow if we set the speed limit at 20 miles an hour and everybody obeyed it. We are clearly not willing to do that, and as a result, we accept the risk of 30 or 40,000 people a year in the U.S. die related to traffic incidents. Persuade me that I'm mistaken about Vision Zero.
Well, I think the underlying premise is what we agree on, that fatalities are unacceptable. So where we may agree or disagree on the ability to achieve Vision Zero might be different. I think everybody from who we've heard and spoken to over the years agrees that fatalities need to be stopped. We need to eliminate them. And, you know, how can we best do that? And that's a real question. And you're absolutely right. Everybody's in agreement right now as far as the state government, federal government, you know, Governor DeSantis and Secretary Perdue at DOT have a very firm commitment to zero roadway fatalities. And so we're glad to honor that at the TPO as well. And we recognize that we can't do this alone. It's a community effort in order to actually achieve Vision Zero. But our best foot forward to accomplish that is also technology. So when we start talking about the technology element, it's a multifaceted, multi-benefit element because it'll get people more efficiently through the system. So it saves people money and time, and it will get you through the system safer as well.
You're selling me a super optimal solution. You're selling me a both sides win kind of solution. And of course, if that's the case, then I'm all in. The question I would have, because the two constraints, as I understand it, is number one, cost, obviously, and number two is efficiency of transportation flow. And what I have always perceived is the more you work to reduce fatalities, the more it's going to impede those two things. It's going to cost you a lot of money, and it's going to impede traffic flow. And I'm willing to spend some money, and I'm willing to spend some traffic flow efficiency in order to save lives, obviously. The unacceptable one, I would say undesirable, I'm willing to accept some risk because we accept it right now. That's where I don't quite go to the conclusions that you've got. But again, I want you to persuade me because I'd gladly be on the side that says, hey, let's save all the lives we can.
Right, right. So the way we look at it is if we assign a number, so basically going back, the Vision Zero. Vision Zero is the goal.
Okay.
Zero roadway fatalities. If we assign a number, let's say 10. We're going to say it's acceptable for 10 people to die on our roadways. You have to look at the human element of that. You know, you're assigning people to die. You're assigning people that it's okay for 10 people to die when, and that's the way we look at it. You know, it's will we actually ever be able to hit 10? That's the argument. The reality of actually hitting that goal, but it's just like the goal of weight loss or a goal of saving money. If you don't have a overarching broad goal that you are striving for,
but it also has to be achievable at the same point. So there's arguments on both sides of it, but our stance is zero is the only acceptable number for roadway fatalities.
Yeah, see, I guess that's it's that unacceptable except because I'm with you. 10 is not just a number. 10 is individuals with families and jobs and names and all of that. To me, it's sort of a broader philosophical question. You know, we have all kinds of things in life that carry risk, whether it's, you know, flying in a plane or jumping out of that plane or rock climbing or, you know, playing on a swing set or playing baseball or football. And all of these activities carry a level of risk. I know when I go out the door in the morning in my car, there's a risk I die that day and there's a risk my kids die that day. That's a horrible, terrible thing to contemplate, but we all engage in a behavior that makes that risk real. And again, if you can persuade me that it is cost effective and transportation efficiency and freedom effective, and there's minor cost to those things or even reasonable low level cost to those things to save most or all the lives, I'm in. But it starts to sound like the balancing act between those two values weighs too heavily on the save life side and doesn't weigh heavily enough on the other values that transportation brings to us. That's if you called it vision less, you know, or vision fewer, you know, I'm in. But the more you get towards zero, it seems to be it's going to be more expensive and more contrary to traffic flow and transportation needs in order to get there. So we probably, I'd like to say we disagree only at the extreme of the scale, but I think it sounds like we have a little bit different take in general also.
Yeah, that's totally respectful. You know, everybody has a different view on it. But as we also create a safer system, you also alleviate the number of crashes and the high injury crashes that occur as well.
I love that.
So, that's the hope. And there's many, many, many studies out there from different hospitals and community organizations about the cost of highway roadway injuries and fatalities to the taxpayer.
Agreed.
Because if there's a tremendous savings as if you're making a system safer, that it saves money for the taxpayers and it saves money for the healthcare and system and everything else that stems around a community. So there's a tremendous benefit. It's not something I don't think we can actually fully debate in a morning session here. We
right.
would need like a couple of days to actually go through it.
But I'm actually very open to that argument.
Yeah.
I mean, if spending money on the front end to enhance traffic safety saves us money in first responders and hospital costs and EMS transports and loss of productivity and revenue and car damage and insurance rates, I mean, you got me. I mean, I'm good. That's just smart investing. That's like investing in better schools so you don't have to build as many jails. I get that. That's good. So I'm with you on that possibility. Austin Mount, he is the CEO for the Emerald Coast Regional Council, which oversees the Transportation Planning Organization. Austin, thank you for the conversation. We'll continue it when we talk about especially more news about this US 29 project in the future. But thanks for joining me this morning. Thanks for disagreeing with me. I always appreciate that, sir.
Thank you for having me, and handshake, fist bump, and more power.
Absolutely. That's right. I love it. All right,
all in this together.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. We'll talk to you again soon. I appreciate it. All right, 5:53 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. Lots of good stuff in there, and we will have more conversations about all of that over the next several months and probably over the next several years as this project starts to roll out. Hey, when I say words like BMW, Porsche, Mercedes, Genesis, Audi, Jaguar, Lexus, these are what? Good, high-end imports that you paid a little bit extra to get. You might think, well, I've got to go to the dealership for service. You don't. You don't. Actually, federal law protects you from having to go to the dealership for service if you want to go somewhere else. Of course, you go to the dealership, and oftentimes that's in a distant place like Mobile or Destin, and that's gas, and that's time, and that's probably a higher price. Instead, Bobby Likas Auto Service, right here on Davis Highway. They work on these cars. They work on domestics, too. Okay, no problem. Diesel engines, yes. Gas engines, yes. Anything that runs on the road, you can take it into them, and they will work on it. CarClinicService.com is the website, like a healthcare clinic. For your car, the idea is, just like you take your body to the doctor, take your car to Bobby Likas, have him look it over and make sure that there's nothing coming down the road, that you didn't expect, that's more inconvenient and more expensive than it has to be. Bobby Likas Auto Service right here on Davis Highway.
Pensacola Christian Academy is the area's premier kindergarten learning program. Why?
Because in a fun, safe environment, even four-year-olds learn to read. Beginning with letters and sounds, progressing to reading words, sentences, and stories. And the best part? If your child attends K-4 and K-5 at Pensacola Christian Academy, you'll get first grade tuition-free. Spots are filling quickly, so go to enrollpca.com to register now.
This was a test of the emergency alert system. This was only a test.
Physical activity can make your life better. Spring is a great time to begin reaching your movement goals. The Florida Department of Health in Santa Rosa County is celebrating National Minority Health Month and promoting breastfeeding for all babies by holding the All Moms, All Babies 1 Mile Color Walk or Run on April 13th. This free family fun event will be held at the Baghdad Mills Site Park beginning at 10 a.m. Call 850-983-5250 to pre-register or for more information, visit health.gov/moveyourway for tips on how to get active.
Hi, this is Earl Ron. New South Window knows how unpredictable coastal weather can be. And that's why our windows and doors are designed to take on severe hurricanes and the most intense heat. They're built and installed by us, meaning better value and a lifetime guarantee for you. Give your family security that lasts a lifetime. And get New South proud.
For a limited time only, save 35% on New South Windows products and installation.
Bands on the Beach is back, so grab a lawn chair or a towel and enjoy live music at the stage on Pensacola Beach. There's plenty of room to spread out and enjoy the sand, the sunset, and great live music every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. This week, it's the hottest classic rock and roll horn band in Pensacola, the Baybridge Band. So grab a blanket or lawn chair, but don't bring any pets or glass, and get to Bands on the Beach this Tuesday night at 7 at the Coastside Pavilion on Pensacola Beach, thanks to the Santa Rosa Island Authority.
It's News Radio Pensacola on 92.3, 95.3, AM 1620, the website, the app, or your smart device. It's news on your terms.
JD, you are not even listening to me.
Nag, 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 nag!
Woke up this morning, can't find my shoe. Nobody got these walking blues. And I woke up this morning, can't find my shoes.
Oh man, I could just listen. I could definitely listen to that. Plus, Winona Ryder arguing with Christian Slater always makes for entertaining movies. 5:58 on News Radio 92.3. What's your damage, Heather? David Wayne is in the newsroom this morning with our headlines. David?
Oh, no. Keep the music going. That's a good... House Speaker Mike Johnson set to make an appearance alongside Donald Trump today at Mar-a-Lago. Reports say the two are holding a news conference focused on election integrity. The event comes as Johnson faces some threats from conservative Republicans to oust him as Speaker if he moves along with Ukraine funding. Lots of reaction coming in after the death of O.J. Simpson this week. Cato Kaelin was a house guest of Simpson's at the time of the murders back in the 90s. Simpson was accused of those. He went on to Kaelin went on to become a key witness during the trial. He shared some condolences.
I would just put out my condolences just to the kids, to Sydney and Justin, and to Arlene and Jason.
And, of course, O.J. Simpson passed away after a battle with cancer this week. Apparently, Drake's been dropped from that lawsuit over the Astroworld Music Festival. He asked to be dropped from that last month. He said he had nothing to do with the planning, didn't know about the safety concerns. That was granted on Wednesday.
Very good, David. Thanks so much for the update. If you've got any kind of a leak, a drip, a weird sound in the wall when you flush the toilet or turn on the water, that's a plumbing problem, call Barbary Plumbing. They will take care of it. Flat rate pricing by the job, not by the hour. 477-8782 for Barbary Plumbing. UWF gets a huge donation to kickstart more of its campaign.
Listen on air at 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620. News Radio 92.3, WNRP, Gulf Breeze, Milton, Pensacola.